Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by a panel of expert guests as we look ahead to the last major of the year, the 151st Open Championship from Hoylake. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. This week, I'm pleased to be joined once again by Tom Jacobs, golf writer and host of the Lost for Words podcast, and freelance golf writers Matt Cooper and Dave Tindall. Welcome, gents. And let's start with last week. Well, if you backed our tips, then you were in for a very eventful week and weekend. Shane Lowry, Max Homer and Tommy Fleetwood were all in the top 10 at one point at the Genesis Scottish Open before fading away a little bit yesterday afternoon, but some each way returns there. And at the Barbasol, it was a remarkable week for our picks, with three out of four selections from Ben Coley and Tom Jacobs contending on Sunday. And the fourth one actually withdrew, Cameron Champ, who was swapped in last minute by Ben Coley from Vincent Norman, which we will not discuss in any more detail. But all three did end up finishing the places, and we're reeling a little bit because of the 151 shot. Trevor Traffic Cone, as he is known amongst his friends and family, sort of threw the tournament away with a late double bogey in the 70th hole. It was 16th hole in the final round there. But Tom, let's go to you first, because you were actually on the podcast. I think it may be the first time we've had a back-to-back guest, because we're just riding the form. So a fair few near misses. And you'd have to say one with Tommy Fleetwood going very close for you in Scotland, and Lucas Glover being the 36th hole leader at the Barbasol. Talk us through your week.
I think with Tommy Fleetwood, you expect him to relish those conditions yesterday, right? And I felt pretty confident going into the final round, especially when Rory was having some struggles on the front nine. And yes, you know, Rory McIntyre was coming with a run, but I still felt pretty confident with Fleetwood, even when he wasn't doing his best stuff on the front nine, just pars everywhere. And then he just lost steam. And it's been a little thing with Fleetwood for a while now. I don't know if it's just that word PGA Tour hanging over his shoulders is just bothering him a little bit, because it was a co-sanctioned event. I don't know if he would have reacted differently if it was just a DP World Tour event. That's maybe a little bit of a psychological thing there. But I think he was great again. He's proving how well he's playing, and he's definitely going to have his backers again in Liverpool this week. I won't be getting there based on what I saw yesterday. But yeah, it was great to see, and you know, he keeps himself in contention, and surely the win's coming soon. And then Lucas Glover, probably the less said the better on him. Really good, 36 holes, looked really, you know, really in contention and in command. And I really thought he was the one, considering the lack of experience at the top of the leaderboard yesterday. But alas, he didn't perform. And he just put a birdie. I think he birdied the last hole, maybe parred it. He played really well in the last hole to make it look like he was going to fall one short. But it wasn't to be. And we go again this week, I guess.
Absolutely right. Yeah, he started slowly, birdied, I think, 13 and 14 to give you false hope again. But that is betting. And Tommy Fleetwood, very popular around his hometown. It just shows how hard it is to back up a low round. I think it was 63 he had on the Saturday. And that came into fruition once again. But some great picks, Tom. And welcome back. We're pleased to have you. Now, if we go to Dave, you had an even worse beat. I think I've read Bob McIntyre was yours. Talk us through it. Because, I mean, did you know, you may not want to hear this, Rory was a 0.5% chance of winning standing on the 17th tee. So that makes it really good. Talk us through it.
Yeah, it was my headline pick, Bob McIntyre. I kind of got this idea that he'd watched Rasmus Højgaard win in Denmark, and he thought, I'll have a bit of that winning in front of my home fans. And for three rounds, I guess he was thereabouts. And I'm thinking, well, he could scrape a place. And then on Sunday, he played magnificent golf, didn't he? I think there was at one point when Tyrrell Hatton was going the wrong way, and maybe Rory had a tough par three coming up, where I think McIntyre could have gone four clear. I think if he'd made a birdie on that par five, he may have made a six in the end. But okay, not to be. And then Rory closed the gap. And then on the 18th hole, a poor tee shot, admittedly, and you're thinking, oh, he's going to have to hack out. But then he plays that ridiculously good three wood. I don't know if you've seen on social media some really good footage of it where you can see it sort of slice in. knocks that to 4 feet, and I'm thinking, well, there's something that'll go wrong. And then he holds the putt, and it's just like, well, this is fantastic. I've got a 66-1 winner. These last couple of holes are just impossible. You know, they're playing way over par. And then Rory misses his birdie on 16. I'm thinking, well, he's got to play these last two in one under just to get a playoff. No chance. And then he birdies them both, and it's just like, wow. But I don't know, sometimes it's like if your team is playing against Lionel Messi and he curls one into the top corner from 30 yards, sometimes you just go, wow, that's brilliant. You've just got to hold your hands up. And for McIlroy to do that was sensational. It's just a shame it came against Bob McIntyre when I was on him.
You're a better man than me. If there's money on it, I would not be cheering for Messi in any way, shape or form. But well done. And Matt, I'm not sure about your picks. You can fill us in. But as a neutral, what did you make of the Genesis Scottish Open with the entertainment that was? And of those two shots, what was your favourite? Because there's been a lot of that back and forth. The three wood sort of held off as incredible. But the two iron low stinger when he didn't have the three iron out of a sandy divot. I mean, some of the greatest shots we've ever seen.
Yeah, I think they're easily two of the greatest shots. And I think it's classic Rory McIlroy as well, that to go birdie-birdie, as Dave says, on the two most difficult holes on the course. I always tend to say with Rory that he makes the impossible look simple and the simple look impossible. That tends to that's his sort of weird knack. But most typically shown when his second round at Portrush, when he made such a mess of the first round and then he came to the second round. Can he get to the weekend? He played an absolutely astonishing round that day. But even though he played some brilliant golf, it was always on the toughest holes, on the simplest holes, he failed to make birdies. He's an astonishing player. And also, I think sometimes we get a bit obsessed with trying to work out which is the best shot, McIntyre's or McIlroy's. It's a bit like when people are trying to decide who's better, Jack or Tiger. It's a bit like if you're in an area full of bungalows and there's two towers and you look up at them and you can see that they're so much higher than everything else and you're trying to work out which one has got 23 stories and which one's got 24. You can't tell from the bottom. All you know is that they're miles and miles better than anything else. And I tend to think of that as those two shots. They're just simply sensational shots. And I just really hope that Robert McIntyre takes the next step and does really well, because it was a big week for him last week. He started it talking about how he's getting a lot of stick from people on social media saying that he's not doing enough for the talent that he's got. I think the victory would have been a huge step, but hopefully just the performance that he put in will actually enable him to take that next step.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And it really was, I don't know if there's any player in the world, if it wasn't Rory, who does that, let's be honest. And it'll be interesting to see how and what that does this week going into Hoylake, which of course was his last win in 2014 here. On the other side, it was Vincent Norman who won in the States in the end, in a playoff. As mentioned, Ben Coley took him out live in the podcast and I shared the email he sent tipping him, saying surely he wins. So the Swede there, one to keep an eye on, along with Ludvig Arberg, but only just, it looked briefly like Nathan Kimsey was going to get a PGA Tour card ahead of Tommy Fleetwood's, or his first win anyway, and a Tour card, but wasn't to be on the playoff hole, and Vincent Norman got it done. But that covers off that, and I think it really is now time to get into the 151st Open Championship preview from Royal Liverpool. The Open returns to Hoylake this week for the 13th time in its history and the first time since 2014, where, as I mentioned, Rory McIlroy won his one and only Open Championship. And Hoylake was also the host to Tiger Woods' last Open win, where he famously hit only one driver the entire week, hitting those brilliant stingers with two iron off the tee all week to avoid the perilous pot bunkers. He won't be here this week, but Tiger Christiansen of Germany will be. So there is one to keep an eye out on the field, a 19-year-old amateur who got through qualifying alongside Alex Fitzpatrick, the brother of Matt. So we're going to come to you first, speaking of Matt, because you're our man on the ground this week. We're a bit sad that you aren't doing this live from the campsite. So first, we want to hear about your accommodation. And then second, want to hear how Royal Liverpool's treating you. I think you've already been out, had a look at the course, and you can tell us about all of these changes, which we've heard a lot about, especially the 17th hole, I believe.
Yeah, I'm in the campsite this week, or rather more specifically, I'm on the rugby pitch at Hoylake Rugby Club. They're aware of the fact. They're letting everybody put tents and camper vans on there. So we're in the communal dressing rooms all week, which will be quite interesting. And I've had a little walk on the golf course, and it's quite interesting. They had 51 days early this year when there was no rain whatsoever, which kind of lets you know that the turf is quite firm. But then the last 3 weeks has been very damp and quite rainy, and that's led to the fact that the fairways and the greens are quite green and quite sort of verdant and lush. But the rough is not as green as I was expecting. I thought there'd be some green shoots down in the roots, but that doesn't appear to be the case. Not that I've done an extensive walk across the course, but I did get the chance to walk across it earlier. And it's perhaps not as thick as I was expecting. It is very blustery, and it's expected to stay that way for the coming week. I've had a chat with a couple of players who've played the course this morning, and they say it's playing pretty tough. It's a good test this week, and let's hope it remains that way. And then the 17th, Ollie, you're spot on. I was fortunate enough to play it a couple of years ago, and then I played it again earlier this year. And unless we all get this very wrong, a lot of us could look very foolish if we suddenly discover that it turns out to be quite an easy hole. I think most of us have decided it's going to be a real brute. It's a really fiendish test. It's some listeners will remember that the 15th hole was a par 3 that came from the dunes inland. They've now replaced that with the 17th, which is a par 3 that goes inland to the dunes. And the green is perched up on those dunes. And anything short, and especially with backspin, will be sucked back into a front wasteland bunker. Anything right or left, there's kick-off areas towards two pot bunkers. And then anything that goes over the back goes into more waste area that then heads off into the beach. And to be honest, there's only a very small area of the green that doesn't have land that falls away into one of those four grassy areas. And also, talking to locals and members who've played here, plenty of them have been in one bunker, found themselves in the next bunker for the next shot, and into the next bunker for the next shot. Now, obviously, this is the world's elite who are playing this week, so you would like to think they're not going to have lots of experiences like that, but it's not out of the question that some poor unfortunate so-and-so is going to have that kind of an existence at some point this week. We've known Tommy Nakajima famously had road hole troubles when he was in contention at St. Andrews. Thomas Bjorn's challenge at Royal St. George's came to grief in a bunker. There's a good chance that a sort of repeat of that might happen this week.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say the word exciting, but it is somewhat exciting. It's the penultimate hole where it could all unfold, especially if the wind turns and it's downwind. I simply don't know how you hold that green in any way, shape or form, but that will be very exciting. And it has changed since we mentioned 2014, which, Dave, that just sneaks into your fantastic 10-year trends piece that you do every time. And one of the things I was amazed at, that 8 of the last 9 major winners have been in their 20s, Koepka being the exception, which is stunned me straight away. But what can you talk us through what your key findings were through that trends piece, and what sort of you've remembered as well from 2014 at Hoylake?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely surprised by the amount of 20-somethings. I suppose if there's going to be one, I do these trends pieces for all four majors. If there's one where it's more 30-somethings and even 40-somethings, it's the Open, isn't it? We've read quite a lot with Darren Clark, Ernie Els, Zach Johnson, I think Francesco Molinari was even 35 or over. So anybody 35 or over that is now looking a bit long in the tooth for the other majors, this one is where that sort of craft and guile come to the fore. So yeah, so I think it's definitely valid to look a bit further down the age brackets, because, I mean, the Open as well, because of the nature of the land, you're not just smashing driver all the time. I think especially on this course, I think, you know, you do have to put the ball in play. I mean, Tiger, as you said, famously hit one driver. But I think there is more of a premium on finding the fairway, perhaps more than on other courses. I think you'll see more long irons used. But yeah, is it my favourite? I think it's almost my favourite Open course. I mean, I'm a Liverpool fan and I love the Beatles. So obviously I like going to that part of the world. Do you remember in 2014, one of the US broadcasters did this little piece on the Beatles, and they were asking various players, and they asking them to name the Beatles, and they asked Rory McIlroy, and he said, "Is George Lucas one of them?" And then they asked Bubba, and he couldn't name any of them. And then get this, it gets worse. They asked Hideki Matsuyama, and he hadn't heard of the Beatles. That blows my mind to this day. I was thinking, guys, what are you doing with your lives? I mean, you may be multimillionaires, but you've not got a basic grasp of popular culture. So, yes. So I can't wait for I am actually staying in a B&B in Penny Lane, which is obviously a nice Beatles touch. But I don't camp anymore. I think Matt will tell you why. It involves a tent blowing away, famous story. But yeah, I played the course a couple of times, but not in this, since they've done the 17th, so I'll be particularly keen to see that.
Okay, and we're particularly keen to see your picks, and if any of them can name all four Beatles, maybe that's a bit of research throughout the week. Okay, and Tom, coming to you, Rory obviously is... a big favourite here, obviously hot favourite. He's won here before, he won last week. And looking through the top of the market, he's 7-1, Scheffler 9-1, Rahm slightly bigger at 12-1. How hard is it to separate those? I think they essentially are the big three now. We can probably give them that title. And do you think Rory warrants being nearly half the price of John Rahm, which is nearly unthinkable a few months back?
Yeah, it's a tough one to say, isn't it? I think ultimately they have to do it because he's going to have his support. It is Rory McIlroy, and he did win it in 2014. So in that respect, yes, you can see why they did it. In ultimate terms, probably not, because they're the three best players in the world who any one of them could get a bad side of the draw or a bad lie or anything like that. And especially we've seen with Scheffler and Rahm, really, that the putting can change so much week to week that I wouldn't be really keen on anyone in single digits in the Open Championship this week. And not because I don't think any of them can win. I think all three of them have got great chances. Rory, at the top of the three. But I just think it's very difficult to side with someone at short odds at an Open Championship, which I'm sure we'll get a little bit of an argument from later on, which I'm pleased to listen to. But I just think that if I was to pick one, it would be Rory. And I do get why the money's coming. I was really impressed with him at the Scottish Open. Like I'm pretty harsh on Rory McIlroy as a golfer in the sense that, you know, he hasn't won a major in 9 years, and he does. I know he wins way more than we give him credit for, but it just feels like he does struggle still to win in great situations. And it looked it was going to be that way again yesterday at the Scottish Open, and I was just really impressed with how he rallied back over the closing holes. And it was really nice actually to see, you know, Dave wouldn't have thought so, and certainly Robert McIntyre wouldn't have thought so. But like, it was great to see two players actually go for the win, and they were separated by class rather than someone kind of throwing it away. So, I think Rory McIlroy's done enough to be favourite, a long-winded answer to that. And I think, ultimately, I just can't go to the top of the market.
Yep, absolutely fair. And as you say, it'll be exciting to see who the headline picks were. Just before we get there, one for you, Matt, and you spoke about Bob McIntyre, who was... just beaten there, and he's gone on social media to say some people had a go. He seems to put that right. He did very well the week before a late triple bogey. And we spoke at length, and we're going to do this each week really leading up to the Ryder Cup, of who needed a big week. And I mean, what a time to do it. He jumped, I think, 8 spots into third, which is the last automatic spot with that runner-up finish. And also, he's won at Marco Simone, which is a massive feather in his cap going forwards. That was very impressive. Who this week needs a big week with all these extra points on offer to cement a place in that team? Who needs it, and who do you think will deliver it? And they might even be the same person.
Wow, that's a good question and a nice one to throw at me with no prep. Excellent. I'm going to say... A bit of a bluster this. I think anybody who is a potential rookie needs to have a really good week, because I always think that if you are a rookie, you've really got to try and get there on merit. And then if you do get a captain's pick, so be it, that's fine. But if you don't get there by merit, it's kind of like you've left it out of you've taken it out of your own hands in terms of getting there. I think that somebody who's in a very similar situation to Robert McIntyre in that he has won at Marco Simone is Adrian Meronk. And I think it's quite interesting. He's flirted with a decent performance in the majors this year. He's actually managed to get to 2-under through about 6 or 7 holes at the Masters, the PGA and the US Open. And then he's drifted backwards and missed the cut at 2 of them. He's actually got some sneaky links form. He got to the last 4 of the amateur championships and also topped the stroke play qualifiers on one occasion. So he's got the potential. And I think if he had a really big week this week, he'd be letting Luke Donald know that up against elite company, he's got the class to take them on. And just that would just settle down the fact that he's done brilliantly against DP World Tour opposition, but he just needs to just say, you know, I can do it against the elite. And then he would fit nicely alongside Robert McIntyre in that the pair of them have both won at Marco Simone.
Yeah, brilliant. And we have seen, especially Le Golf National in 2018, how important experience in playing the course is. We saw Justin Thomas was the only one who did quite well, and he obviously was basically the only player who went over to play it. So could definitely help them with selections. Let's have a look at that top of the market. And everyone's sort of got something, you know, by their name. We saw Rory 7-1, Scottish Open winner last time. Scotty Scheffler 9-1. I mean, if he held 50% of putts, not 10%, he wins by 5 every. Again, I was amazed by that last week. And we are every time. 12-1 Rahm, Masters champion. 16-1 Cam Smith, defending champion. 18-1 Koepka, PGA champion. 22-1 Fowler, won a fortnight ago. Good form, obviously played this one before. And the Lynx player won in Scotland at Gullen a few years back. Tommy Fleetwood, 22-1, hometown hero, and obviously in good form as well. And then a bit further, Victor Hovland, highly fancied, looking for his first major, as are Schauffele and Cantlay at 25-1. I mean, what an exciting time in golf right now. I mean, it's pretty hard to pick winners. So you guys are doing very well getting in and amongst it. And with that, I think let's find out who your outrights are. And we're going to start with you, Tom. Who are you going to open up with this week?
Yeah, so for me, it's going to be Colin Morikawa at 35-1. And I just thought there was going to be a bit more of an overreaction to his performance at the Rocket Mortgage. His odds have actually gone out a little bit at 35-1 or 33-1, I think, is best price now. And look, this is a player that won his Open Championship with no form coming in. Like, he never played the Open Championship before, and he won there in Kent 2 years ago. I don't think it's going to be too dissimilar to that event. I think that, you know, I think there's a bit more of demand and accuracy maybe here at Hoylake, and that's only beneficial to someone like Morikawa, who is deadly accurate with his irons and his driver. And I love that. And the thing that I look out for the most with Morikawa is his iron play, which we always do. And he's only failed to gain strokes with his irons once this season. And it was at the Travelers when he missed the cut. I'm happy to forgive that. And when you look at his major record so far this season, 10th at the Masters, 26th at the PGA and 14th for the US Open, I actually think they're sneakily pretty good. Like, I think Morikawa's been getting a bit of a hard time this season for not getting a win, and it's been a little while since he has got that win. But I see him being right in the mix this time around. And at the second at the Rocket Mortgage, he looked so determined to win. And, you know, anyone can say it's a Rocket Mortgage, but you have to go out there and win it. You know, the people that will say it doesn't really mean a lot will also use it as a reason to back Ricky Fowler, right? And I think that ultimately he played brilliantly there, and he just looked ready to win again. And yes, he did take the Scottish Open off, but I think we found out last time when he played the Scottish Open before the Open that it didn't really matter because he finished whatever he did, 67th there, and then won the Open. So to me, I'm really impressed with Morikawa. I think he's the type of person that adapts really quickly. He's found his iron play again, and I suspect that he will be in the hunt again at the Open Championship.
Fantastic. Yeah, you were right. He's still 33-1 available there. So it was 2 points each way from you. Seven places for Colin to get his second Open Championship in just a few years. Okay, let's come to you now, Dave. Who are you throwing us as your headline pick?
Yeah, I totally agree with Tom about Morikawa. But I'll let Tom go with that one. Although Tom won't agree with me on Scotty Scheffler. I get the argument about single figure prices and the vagaries of the weather, although I don't think the weather's going to be massively a factor this week. I mean, you never can tell, can you, on the links, but it doesn't seem that way in the forecast, and unless Matt's got a more up-to-date one, but it seems some wind, but nothing crazy. I mean, Scheffler, basically, if you back Scotty Scheffler, you're guaranteeing yourself interest for all 4 days, and often that's what you want in a golf bet, isn't it? It's nothing worse than you back someone and they miss the cut. Scheffler, what is it, 7 straight top 5 finishes? It's just astonishing. 2 of those were in the majors. Obviously, 3rd in Scotland last week, which shows you can do it on the links. And his strokes gain numbers are just ridiculous. I don't think we've seen anything like it since they sort of came into being as the sort of more sort of robust set of stats rather than the basic ones. I mean, he's gaining at least 10 strokes on the field, I think, in each of his last 7 starts. So it's just amazing. As you said, Ollie, though, the putter. But even then, I had a really close look at his putting stats, and he actually gained strokes on the greens in 2 of his last 3 events, which is good. Obviously, he didn't in Scotland last week, but they were slow greens. There was some adapting that had to be done. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. I think he has bottomed out with the putter. I think it was at Memorial where he gained 20 shots tee to green. Again, just what? but he lost 8 strokes on the green. So I think that was kind of when the putting really went to pieces. But I think it slowly got back. They did actually ask him in Scotland what he thought about it. His quote was, "I believe that I'm a very good putter and everything returns to the average." So he himself, I think he also said that he's not going to be swayed by what the press are telling him. Come on, Scott, what are you doing with the putter? In his head, and he's very good at keeping his thought process simple, he thinks he's a good putter and it will return to the average. I did actually check his average. It's not that good, actually. He was 58th in putting last year and outside the top 100 the previous two. So the average Scottish Scheffler's putting season, he's about sort of 80th, 90th. But to be honest, even that's a kind of an average week. If he does that here, then I think he's got every chance. And in terms of does it need to be a little bit hotter, the putter, before he wins? No, I checked before Phoenix, he had negative strokes going putting. Before he won the Players' Championship, negative in his start before that. So he doesn't have to sort of drop us a big hint that it's turning around. I just think he'll come here. He knows he's got the long game to just get himself in contention. And if you put yourself in that position that often, as Jack Nicklaus used to say in the majors, eventually it's going to fall your way. And I think, although Tom's saying single figures isn't great, I think 9-1 on Scotty Scheffler when you know he's almost going to get a top five. I mean, you could back him each way and almost be guaranteed a return. But I'm happy to back him for the win, to be honest. I can't believe that he won't end this year without a win in a major. He's been that good.
I like the confidence, and you've backed that with 4 points, just win only. Now, I wonder how long it is till we see him try his funky footwork on the greens. Maybe that's the problem. He's too still, and that is what he needs to work out. But it's a good one. I think it may have been you, Matt, a while ago, said he's just playing so well. We're always seeing him. So maybe his putting isn't that bad. We're just seeing so many more putts from 4 feet because no one is that close that often, and could well be the case. But it felt the same way at the Scottish. You're like, how is burning edges? Is not, you know, I don't know if it's the reeds or whatever, but it does look like he soon will win one by 9 shots or more, basically. And Matt, speaking of you, we're going to come to you for your first outright pick this week.
Yeah, I would just drop a nice little hint for Dave, is that when Scheffler won the Phoenix Open, he said that he loves playing on hard, fast golf courses. And I actually immediately went and looked to see at his odds, and he was the least favoured in this tournament. And I immediately backed him then, because I thought he's got a better chance than people were giving him credit, and his price has dropped. So I'm in the smug position of being at double figures. However, my first pick is Victor Hovland. I just think the guy, he got involved at the Old Course last year, the Open, got involved at Augusta National in the Masters, got involved at the PGA Championship. It's almost as if he didn't do very well at the US Open. We've kind of forgotten that he's quite a good major player. He won Memorial to show that he'd learned a lesson pretty quickly. That he's just a very impressive golfer, especially when he's by the sea, when it's blustery. He's going to get lots of that this year, this week. He says that's because he comes from Oklahoma, and in Oklahoma you have to be able to play under the wind. That's a big tip. And a really interesting little thing, I've just seen him, I've spent 10 minutes watching him chipping and escaping from bunkers on the practice chipping green, which is outside the media centre. And he was, given his reputation, he was really, really good. I mean, he was putting everything into tap-in range. Now, I know that's a very different sort of beast from doing it out on the course, and especially in the heat of battle. But it was quite interesting that a fellow who supposedly got this massive weakness in that part of his game was actually looking really, really impressive.
Great. Oh, that was my next question, because that is one thing that's been floated, and people thought maybe it was okay if it was the old bomb and gouge. I think it was the US Open, but this is a bit more fiddly. Was that a concern? But it sounds like you got your eye on him, and you're also there to just, you know, put his balls up a bit, sit them up if they've gone really deep in the rough. So great stuff. And he is 22-1, I believe, is the best price at the moment for Victor Hovland. And that was 1.5 points each way from you there, Matt. Okay, so we've got 3 selections in the books, and we are going to get a second one and specials. But before then, a little bit of a break for everyone's favourite game of Who Am I? Yes, that's right. Who am I? So how this works is I'll give some clues. After each one, you can put your hands up and put a guess in. If you don't have one, that's fine. We'll move on to the next. And the winner just gets praise and plaudits from their fellow experts in the golfing world, and it is a real accolade. I'm hoping we get a trophy sent to whoever wins it the most times, which won't be Ben Coley. So here we go. Who am I? And he is someone who is in the field this week who I like, and it has not gone well so far. So first up, I have been in 3 playoffs on the PGA Tour and lost them all.
Ooh.
A little bit longer to think, just so we get the nice camera angles of all. Matt always eyes go top right. Tom's with the old chin pretending theirs, and Dave's gone top left and cross. Okay, we're moving on. That's fine. When I qualified for the PGA Tour, I was under 18, so I had to wait a few months to make my debut. They have a strict age rule, and he was at 17 and a half. Oh, I'm liking this. Not even a guess after 2. This is me doing my job well. I'm going on to 3. Matt's got someone on his tongue who's not said it. My best finish in the Open was last year when I came in a tie for 15th.
So he's lost all of his playoffs. Has he won, or has he just lost all of his playoffs?
I cannot give you that, but that could come later. Okay, my name was sung by some of the biggest names in golf in a cover of a very famous Groove Armada song. There's a very famous Groove Armada song, and in a press conference, it became a chant throughout a big tournament.
Not a big fan of Groove Armada, to be fair.
I think you'll know this one, but that's fine. And the last clue, and it went quite viral this year, my wife is a professional golfer, and she beat me at nearest the pin during the par 3 contest at the Masters this year.
Dear, oh dear.
Oh, this is, I didn't know we'd get through this, but I can keep going with some, so don't worry about that.
You have to keep going. This is weird.
He has had 4 wins on the PGA Tour.
There we go. Look, that's 4 wins.
You're going to end up giving us his name now, and we still don't know who he is.
Is it Siwoo Kim?
It is Siwoo Kim. Well done, Tom. The Groove Armada song was "I Siwoo Baby Shaking That Ass." Wow. Of course, one of the greats.
I just remember every time I bet on Siwoo Kim, I point to the fact that he's should have 7 wins because he's got 3 playoff losses. So now I can work it out.
It was the playoff losses. It made me think of someone who'd yet to win.
I'm sneaky like that, Dave. I'm very sneaky like that. I don't know what the rules are with 5.5 clues, Tom, but welcome to the winner's podium. I think
if that gets me a trophy, then it's allowed, right?
You're absolutely. Well done. I'm so glad I made it through 5. I think that was... I know James Morrison made it through 5 as well, potentially. But there we go. Just a reminder to you, if you enjoy a game but don't want to bet, then a reminder, the fantasy game on the DP World Tour website is perfect for you. You can select 6 players. Maybe you listen to some of our experts' advice, and you compete against your friends, families, and others for bragging rights every week. So head to the website and check it out. Okay. Tom, with you riding high, it's time to get back into the action and find out who has been selected as your second pick at Royal Liverpool. So who are you going with here, please?
Yeah, so for me, I'm going to go with Russell Henley. So he was 175-1 here in the day. He's 125-1 now, but still 10 places. I see Matt sort of nodding his head there, and he kind of put me on my radar earlier in the season with him. I think it was at the US Open or maybe the PGA, and he's just been in great form, isn't he? Like, he won the Mexico event earlier in the season. He was 4th at Augusta, 14th at the US Open. And he's just been firing on all cylinders. He's been inside the top 5 in strokes gained approach in 3 of his past 4 starts. He leads the tour in driving accuracy. And as I mentioned with Colin Morikawa, I think accuracy is going to be a big factor at Hoylake. And I just love the fact that people will kind of look at his Open record and probably dismiss him quite quickly. But he's been 20th, I think it was at St Andrews in 2015. He was actually inside the top 10 at Southport in 2017 before he faded away. And I just think that with the fact that he's hitting the ball so well, you always get a bit of a rogue name at the top of an Open Championship leaderboard. And I just think he's going to be one of those that fills it. You know, you go back to, you know, here in 2014, you had Eduardo Molinari was up there. Victor Dubuisson, who was playing incredibly well, was up there as well. And just a couple of names you wouldn't suspect. So I think Russell Henley, just the way he's hitting the ball, the fact that he's the straightest driver on tour statistically, and the fact that he's already got a win this season and 2 really strong major finishes, I think Russell Henley is being slightly overlooked in the market at triple digits, especially with the 10 places on offer. Like it already started that Torrey Pines, he was in the mix, wasn't he, when John Rahm won at the US Open, and he's kind of continued that from there. So I don't know if he's kind of changed his tack or thinks that he's just kind of targeting these bigger events now, which would be a bit of a strange thing to do later on his career when he hasn't got as many wins as he probably wants. But I do think he's just this ultimate player that can lean on those irons and just play incredibly well. And I think we've seen him win in a win, we've seen him contend in a win on the PGA Tour, and now it's the time for him to do it on the British Isles.
There you go, and he does come in some good form, just sneaky good form, actually, as you mentioned, looking through there. So, yeah, 125-1 now, but 10 places and a point each way for the man who's known for being renowned for being a fantastic putter. So if that's hot, he could go well. Matt, who are you opening up with your second and final outright pick this week?
Yeah, if you ever find me at the bottom of a cliff, I shall probably be on top of Shane Lowry. Because when it comes to major championships, I just love Shane Lowry. I was fortunate. I was very convinced that he would do very well at Portrush, and he did very well. And I just like the way he prepares himself for the majors. He talked a year after the Portrush success about how he enjoyed those weeks, and he keeps saying these things. I mean, I think he said one the other day that it's the reason he gets out of bed. I mean, I hope there's more reasons that Shane gets out of bed. It would, you know, there's only 4 weeks of major championship golf every year, so it'd be terribly, terribly sad if that was all he really did live for. But he knows how to prepare for them, and he understands that you have good moments and bad moments, and you have to sort of grind through the bad moments. And at the moment, he's had 9 top 25s in his last 11 starts in the majors. What he needs is like a little edge or a little bit of luck to go his way. And perhaps most of all, he needs his putter to get hot. I was on him at Augusta, and it was very frustrating. He kept giving himself 8-foot putt after 8-foot putt and missing them. And eventually got frustrated, lost his temper a little bit and fell away. But he had a couple of 64s at his last start in America. He had a 64 and a 65 last week at the Scottish Open, and I think his putter has warmed up, and he's starting to get some reward for a really, really good long game. And I think getting from tee to green is going to be really important this week. And then the fact that he actually can hold a few putts at the moment is really going to help him. And a big thing I really like about him is his first top 10 in the Open was here at Hoylake in 2014. And he was one of only two players who finished in the top 11 who were in the PM-AM wave. It's well worth looking at people who were in that wave. If you're looking back to 2014, Adam Scott's another one. He actually came off the course going, I've done brilliantly to finish top five this week, because we really got stuffed by the draw. The draw could go wild this week as well. But to know that Lowry and Scott really overperformed much better than their position on the leaderboard suggests, is quite a big tick for me, I think. And then ultimately, I mean, we know from Portrush, he knows how to win a Lynx golf tournament. I think ultimately his price, I think I'd have him shorter than he is. I wouldn't do it maybe in a normal tour event, but in a major and a Lynx major, I'm happy with the price at 30. I'm boasting a little bit. I haven't got a slightly bigger price because I backed him before the Scottish Open. But 33s is still good enough, I think, for me.
Yeah, and great pickup on the PM AM, because that is crucial at majors. We've seen it many times that you basically can't win from the other side. And that was 2014. Went on a bizarre miscut at 4 in a row, 15, 16, 17, 18, and then back to win 21st and 12th. So obviously has won and learned how to since then. And those middle rounds last week, 64, 65, shows it's in there if the putter's hot. So a pick there, and that was 1 point each way at 33-1 from Matt, which just leaves Mr. Tindall, who is bringing the outrights home, and why? I'm guessing they may have featured in your trends piece.
Yeah, the trends piece I wrote. Justin Rose came top of that, which is quite a surprise given that he's up against, you know, everyone else with all these good sort of trends that they're ticking. But he came out top. Part of that was because of his age. As I said earlier, that the Open is the one where you can expect the older guy to not just contend but come out on top. So he was a good age for that. But he ticks a lot of other boxes. I mean, he's won this season, and that was at Pebble Beach, which obviously by the coast, so that bodes well. He's finished second in this event before at Carnoustie. Really good form. Often I think maybe all 10 or 9 of the last 10 had finished in the top 20 in one of the last two, and he's done that as well. I just think this course really suits him as well. If it's going to be a bit more based on accuracy than just sheer brute force and length, then if you look at how his total driving breaks down, he's got a good ranking in that because of his accuracy. He's 31st in accuracy, so he does hit it straight. And then some of his other stats this season, 17th for approached, 20th around the green, which is a testament to his short game, 33rd putting, and he's the number one in sand saves. So if you're going to find yourself in bunkers this week, and surely you are, then you know he's the best bunker player in the field. As for his open record, obviously we saw him make that incredible debut as a teenager when his clothes didn't even fit him at Birkdale, which is not too far from here. And then he had a funny patch, didn't he, for a while? But I think leading up to Hoyland, he didn't play in 2006, but in 2014, he'd missed three of his previous four Open Cuts. And he finished 23rd here, which sort of got him back on track in terms of playing well in the Open. I think maybe just his game had become a bit Americanized, possibly. But since then, we've seen him finish, as I said, second at Carnoustie, sixth at St Andrews. He was 20th at Portrush as well. Okay, he missed a cut in Scotland last week, but that doesn't really bother me. I think that was just getting a few reps in it. I think he went off and played at North Berwick as well. And his form is really good, isn't it? So he was fourth at the Belfry, eighth in the Canadian Open, ninth in the USPGA. He kind of knows how to win. He's won a major. He knows what it's like. He doesn't panic if things go slightly wrong. So I just think of all the veteran players, maybe those 40-plus, he's the one who can not only just challenge, but actually go ahead and win. I think a second major win for Justin Rose is very much on the cards. So I thought he was really good odds at around 40, 45.
Yeah, 40-1. And that was a point and a half each way from you there. And as you said, the wind picks up. He seems like we saw at Merion, he likes the tougher courses and the high scoring events. So if that rough does continue to grow or they put some brutal pins out, then definitely one to feature. That concludes the main outright picks, but we have some specials as well for you. And the first person I'm going to come to for that is back to you, Tom. Who is it and what market is it?
Yeah, so it's going to be in the top 20 market, and it's going to be Brian Harman for me. And this was a player that I was keen on at the Scottish Open last week. And that was based on previous Open Championship finishes and the fact that he was in very, very good form. And that kind of came to the fore again at the Scottish Open. He finished 12th, but he was actually third going into the final round last week. And when you look at his Open Championship record, he's been 19th and 6th in the last two. And he was 26th on debut, which brilliantly came here at Hoylake. So those factors and the fact that he's actually in brilliant form, three straight top 12 finishes and a second at the Travellers most recent, at the start of that run, to me, just kind of highlights that Brian Harman is a little bit overlooked in the market. And I think it's very much this Americans versus Europeans in Open Championships as to whether, I've kind of gone with that sort of line of thinking with Henley and Harman. I think they're pretty similar players in the sense that they both go through accuracy, they're both hitting their irons well and in good form. And I think they can both overcome what people would consider modest Open Championship records. But with Harman, like the sixth a couple of years ago, it really encouraged me. And I think, to be honest, he's one of the overpriced players in the market considering his current form. So going slightly hesitant with the top 20, but I think potentially there's some each-way value there as well.
Yeah, top 20, he's still 13-5, and you're feeling confident with 3 points. But as you say, he's 125-1 for 8 places still available if you did fancy something a bit more enticing in terms of a price. Okay. Matt, I'm guessing you've gone completely rogue with your specials market. So what are we looking at?
Yeah, I was very lucky. I was at the Amateur Championship last month at Hillside. And so I got to see Christo Lambrecht, who was the ultimate winner, a South African play. And he would be well worth looking out for this week because he is an extraordinary hitter of the golf ball. He sort of hits a golf ball a bit like a hammer thrower hurls the hammer in track and field. It's like nothing you've ever seen. He's also very tall, very willowy. And when I got chatting to the South African team, they were a little bit surprised he's done as well as he did. I mean, he's got a lot of weapons with this hitting. For instance, every par four that was shorter than 425 yards, he took aim at the green. I'm not joking. That's how far this guy hits it. But he's wild. and he got away with it at Hillside because the rough was very, very wispy. And it was set up, you know, it was set up nicely, but it wasn't set up brutally. I think this week is going to be a bit tougher. It also wasn't especially windy at Hillside. And he's the favourite in this market, and I think he's worth taking on. And there's actually quite a short list for the amateurs this year. There's Tiger Christensen, who Ollie mentioned at the start. He's the Tiger who is in Hoylake this week. He's relatively inexperienced at this kind of level. Mateo Fernandez de Oliveira is an Argentinian guy who won the Latin American Championship. He won it at the course that hosts the Puerto Rico Open, which is quite blustery. He's also played here in 2016 and went and saw that Roberto Vicenzo won at Hoylake in 67, and he got quite emotional seeing all the stuff. So he might be inspired. Harrison Crowe, the Australian who got through here, I have found out that he came here and played a couple of rounds last month. But I think those guys are going to struggle a little bit. And there's two guys I think can take on and the favourite. One is Alex Maguire, an Irishman. He plays in a Lynx Golf all the time. He's played here a few years ago because he's a big Liverpool fan like Dave. And his dad, his dad's a big Spurs fan. They came over and watched Spurs, Liverpool at Anfield. So Alex has had a bit of experience here, but he had that when he was young. It's nearly 10 years ago. The guy I'm going to go with, he hails from Castellón, which is where Sergio Garcia is from. He plays at Arizona State, which is where John Rahm went to university. And his name is Ballester. There's no OS at the end of it. He's Jose Luis Ballester. And this guy, he could be a really, really good golfer. He won the European Amateur last month. And his final round, he woke up, looked out the window, saw the trees bending in all directions and thought it's going to be really difficult today. And he ground his way round and won it. So I'm not scared if it's going to blow. Last year in the European Team Championships, he played very, very well at Royal St. George's and got 66 there. So he understands Lynx golf. He played very well in the European Team Championships last week, topped the stroke play scoring and played well in the match play. I think he's in quite good nick. I think he's got quite a lot of game. And I think he's the guy to take on Lamprecht with this week in the top amateur. And you can get 4-1 on him.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's such an exciting market looking at that. All the prices really quite similar. And interesting who some people are taking on. Harrison Crowe is a member down at St. Michael's, very near me, which is a very windy course. But okay. There isn't that penal rough, isn't too bad. And Lamprecht, in case you don't know, as you mentioned, he won at Hillside, is only just down the road, obviously, in Liverpool. If there's any US listeners who aren't au fait with the north of England. Beautiful. So that was 4-1 and a 2-point win there for the top amateur market, which is always exciting to keep an eye on. Leaving just Dave, your final pick this week in the specials.
Yeah, after Matt's sort of wander into the sort of cult, I'll go back to the more familiar grounds of top 20. Corey Connors, it's a really simple argument. It's black and white. He either plays well in a major or he misses the cut. So he's played in the last 14 majors he's played, he's missed the cut 7 times, made the top 26 times. And then the other one, he was just off 28th. That was at St. Andrews last year. So the last two opens, 28th at St. Andrews, 15th at Royal St. George's. Really good form as well. He's had 5 top 20s in his last 7 worldwide starts. That includes 19th in the Scottish Open last week, which is a nice little warm-up for this. And again, I think all of us are sort of leaning towards the accuracy idea, being a bit more ramped up here than it is at other open venues. And that obviously plays into the hands of Corey Connors. He was second in fairway hit last week in Scotland, so that part of his game is really strong. This season, he's 18th off the tee, 12th tee to green, 11th on approach. So quite a simple argument. He is very good at landing top 20s in majors, and I think this course is a good fit for him. So quite simply, yeah, Corey Connors at what odds have we got? That market was fairly new when I looked at it, but I think it'll be a decent enough odds.
Yeah, just having a look here. I've got 12-5 down at the moment. So pretty nice odds, and you've allocated 3 points there on Corey. And a real trend overall with Brian Harman, not the longest, but very accurate, which is important, especially if it's hard and fast, as Matt says. Obviously, the ball will just keep going and going. So those driving irons, well worth looking out for. Okay, that is a great summation, nearly a full hour on the 151st Open Championship. And now it's time just to recap all of the tips from the guys. Starting with Matt Cooper's picks this week for the Open Championship, it was Victor Hovland at 22-1 for 1.5 points each way, being his first selection, and then Shane Lowry at 33-1, 1 point each way, his second outright pick. His special bet was Jose Luis Ballester as top amateur at 4-1 for a 2 point win. Dave Tindall picked Scotty Scheffler at 9-1, a 4 point win only as his opening selection, and Justin Rose at 40-1, 1.5 points each way as his second selection, his special bet being Corey Connors as a top 20 at 12-5, good for 3 points. And finally, Tom Jacobs. He started with Colin Morikawa at 35-1, 2 points each way, followed by Russell Henley at 125-1, 1 point each way, and his special bet, another top 20, this time Brian Harman at 13-5 for 3 points. Thanks once again to our panel of experts for those fantastic insights on the Open. And let's hope after weeks of knocking on the door, we can finally get across the line with a winner. Time to say goodbye and thanks to our guests. You can find Tom Jacobs on Twitter at TomJacobs93. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me again. Really looking forward to it. Hope we're going to land this winner. There's been a couple of really near misses now with Hatton, Hovland, Fleetwood. So hopefully, they'll be three popular people in this field. But hopefully one of our picks this week get the job done.
Absolutely. And thank you as well to Matt, who's on Twitter at Matt Cooper Golf. Thanks for coming away from the campsite and putting down the rugby ball and just going, out in the grounds and finding out. And also, I forgot to say, 9 minutes we were before you came up with your first paradox, which was the bungalow paradox and towers. So that's a new record and we appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm thinking of running out of the media centre to try and grab Niall Horan, who's currently having a chit-chat with Rory McIlroy, and just ask him on Dave's behalf who were in the Beatles. And I think he'd be disappointed if he didn't get the answer. But yeah, it's quite nice to see there's a bit of star sprinkling on the Open this year. That there's been a little bit of lacking of that in recent years. It used to be quite a common thing, like rumours that various film stars, George Clooney was always being rumoured to be rocking up to the Open, but we haven't heard a lot of that recently. But I hope everybody has a really, really good week and that Hoylake delivers yet again.
Well, I hope you have another breakfast or brunch with Jordan Spieth or similar, and you can fill us in next time you are on. And if you do see Niall Horan, if you can get him just to sing I See Woo Baby Shaking That Ass as well, that would be really great. Thank you. And Dave's on Twitter at Dave Tindall Golf. Thanks, Dave, and great work again on your 10-year trends piece. Anything you'd like to say to the followers or just try to gain some new ones?
If you like the Beatles, yeah, follow me this week. I'll be in Penny Lane, but I'm actually going, so I'm really looking forward to that. It's about an hour and a half drive from where I am, so I'll be there Wednesday, Thursday, and then back for the weekend, so I'll be meeting up with Matt and anyone else who wants to say hello. It'd be nice to meet a few people. And yeah, I love Hoylake, so that'd be great.
There you have it. Fingers crossed, one of our picks can lift the famous claret jug on Sunday. Until then, enjoy Open Week and see you next time on The Tips.